leading a beautiful white horse. They didn't even ask me what I wanted her for. The Instaria aren't overly fond of horses. In general, Frey prefer to keep their feet on solid ground.
Gifford had seen horses before, but never this close. He sometimes spotted them, along with deer, in meadows near Dol Ren, and on occasion, also like deer, they were hunted for food.
"Her name is Narrowspur," Malcolm explained, rubbing the animal's muzzle. She snorted and stomped a hoof, making a disturbingly loud noise on the stone floor.
"She's huge!"
"You are going to ride her, Gifford," Padera said with admiration, as if he'd already done so.
Gifford looked up at the towering animal.
"No, I'm not."
"On the back of that animal, you'll run faster than any man in history."
"How will I stay on?"
"You hang on to the mane," Malcolm said. "Lean forward, lie low, and just hang on tight."
"The gods made your arms strong for a reason," the old woman told him.
"How will I make it go the way I want?"
"With this."
Malcolm came over then, holding a piece of metal with straps and buckles tied to it.
"It's called a bridle. Slip this metal piece between her teeth, slide it all the way to the back of her mouth, then buckle it around her head. These long straps will make it possible to turn. She'll go where she's facing."
Malcolm put it on the horse. Then Roan hurried back to the work table, grabbing up wads of cotton padding.
"Relax," Padera said. "The horse is the least of your worries."
Frost waved for Gifford to bend over, as if he planned to tell him a secret. Then he wrapped the string around his head.
14 and a half. 14 and a half,
Flood repeated.
"Why are they doing that?"
Gifford asked.
"The hard part will be getting past the Elven army," Padera explained. "You have to ride across the Granford Bridge, right through their camp. They'll know you're trying to carry a message, and just like when they destroyed the Spyrock, they'll want to stop you, too."
"They'll kill me."
Padera nodded.
"They'll try."
She might have been smiling.
"According to absolutely everyone, what you're about to do is suicide. That's why you have to do it. Don't you see? It's perfect. You have nothing to lose."
"My life. I could lose my life."
"Like I said, nothing to lose."
Gifford didn't have an answer. He knew he ought to, but he didn't.
"Don't look so miserable," she said with a grin, that one eye glaring at him. "I'm not sending you to your death. You won't die. I know it. Your mother knew it too. Now pay attention. Roan has a present for you."
He looked over to see Roan and the dwarfs carrying over a suit of armour. All silver, the thing looked like sunlight on a lake. So shiny he could see his face looking back at him.
"I fashioned this from iron," Roan said. "But it's not iron. This is a new metal, something I've been working on. I made it using a new percentage of charcoal, a better mix. It's harder, lighter, tempered, and I polished it. I figure the smoother it is, the less chance a blade will catch."
Frost, Flood, and Rain all nodded. Malcolm stepped in and lifted the big plates, hinged together by leather straps, over Gifford's head. One plate covered his chest, the other his back, and the straps rested on his shoulders. Then Malcolm and Roan swung shoulder plates over top and began buckling them on.
"The best part is..."
Roan took the matching helm and turned it over, revealing a series of etched markings.
"All of the metal has been engraved with the Orinfar runes. So, not only will swords glance off, but magic should, too."
Padera grinned, so that both eyes were squeezed to slits.
"You're going to make your mother proud, boy."
Roan struggled with tightening the helmet straps. She punched a new hole, having underestimated the size of his head. He tried to make a joke about it, but Roan, who was always too serious, was downright grave. She refused to look him in the eye as she set the helm on his head with a ceremonial formality as if he were a chieftain. Or sacrificial lamb. "Damn it!" she cursed, and pulled the helm off again. "Still too small. You said 14 and a half. It's more like 14 and three-quarters.
"Won?"
"Yeah," she said, turning back to the work table and pulling the buckle out.
"I want to tell you something."
Padera had kept him breathless for the last hour, but as the dwarfs painted the Orenfar markings over the white horse, and Roan continued to work the armour to fit, Gifford had a moment to think. It had never crossed his mind to refuse. The old woman was right. He would go. He would ride across that bridge, not for mankind, or even his mother, but to save Roan. Already he'd thanked Mara 5 times for even this slim chance to do something. All his life he'd watched others play, run, fight, marry, have kids, build homes, hunt, farm, raise sheep, and dance. Gifford never did anything but make cups and look foolish. In an emergency, he couldn't even run for help. He'd always been a burden, always a mouth to feed with the labour of someone else's work. His pottery was a way to give something back, which was why he worked so hard to make it the best it could possibly be, but it wasn't really needed. Gifford had never been needed by anyone.
"I'm going to die."
The thought wasn't painful or scary, just heavy, sobering, like the end of an era. He felt nostalgic rather than frightened, which was strange because Gifford had few good memories. But those he had, every one of them, involved Roan.
"Roan,"
he began,
"I know about Ivy. I know Padera killed him to save you."
Bad time to bring it up, maybe, but time was running out. He knew she felt guilt for Ivor's death, for what Padera had done on her behalf. He wanted to help her understand it wasn't her fault. This would be his last gift to her, his last amphora. Roan dropped the helmet on the ground. It rattled and did a half roll, bumping up against her foot. He waited. She slowly turned, her eyes wide, but this time she looked right at him. He loved those eyes, those windows to worlds of marvels yet undreamed.
I know this is a bad time to be..."
he started, then paused and took a breath to center himself.
"I'll probably not see you again, and I just wanted you to know that Padera didn't kill Ivor," she said in a weak voice. "I did."
The words spilled out of her in one breath. They fell between them like the helmet, with a rattle. Gifford stared, confused.
"You did? What do you mean, you..."
Roan looked down, maybe searching for the helmet. He couldn't tell.
"Roan?"
Her face came back up, pulled by her name. She wanted to take the words back. He could see it in her furrowed brows and lips squished in a sour frown.
"Tell him, Roan,"
Padera said, as she rubbed the horse's nose. Roan glanced at the old woman, then back at him, then at the helmet still on the ground.
"Clance,"
she said. Certain plants and rocks.
You grind them up.
She made a pestle and mortar action with her hands. I fed what I made to mice I kept in a cage. Some just made them sick. Others...
She looked at her feet.
I had to know if it would work on something bigger. So I gave it to one of Gelston's sheep. Mixed it in with the feed. Next morning it was dead. A froth around its mouth.
Gifford couldn't believe what he was hearing.
Gelston cursed the gods. But it had been me.
Roan bent down and picked up the helm.
Ivar killed my mother. He beat her to death. I watched him. He wanted me to see. Wanted me to remember. I did.
You don't need to justify anything to me, Gifford told her. Honestly, if I'd known, I would have killed him myself. I think anyone in the Dáil would have.
She looked up at him with tears in her eyes.
But I was his slave. I was his property. He had every right to—
No, he didn't. No one has such a right. They want you to think so. Trust me, Wone. I know about this.
But he owned me. Me and my mother.
How?
Because he bought my mother.
How?
He treated Wood and Grain with a man in Dorea.
And how did that fellow get to own anyone?
My mother was Gula. She was captured in a battle. Her husband was killed. She was taken as a slave.
Was that white? Was it white she was taken? Husband killed? Made a slave? Was that white, Wone? And what did you do? If it was white for a man to kill a husband and make his wife a slave, how can it be wrong for a child of that same woman to kill a man to be free? The man who made a slave had no right to do that. Just the ability.
You had the ability to free yourself, Wone. You had the ability and the right.
I killed a man. I'm a murderer.
You killed a fiend. You a hero.
How do you know? How can you tell the difference? A lot of people cried at his funeral. I saw them. I watched my neighbors, my friends, weeping over his grave. I caused all that pain. It was me. Ivar always told me I was a curse to everyone who cared about me. That's what I am. A curse. An evil curse. And I deserve everything that happens to me.
She was starting to cry.
That's not true.
It is!
She shouted, so loudly that the dwarfs, and even Narrowspur, looked over.
You care, don't you? You love me, don't you? Don't you?
Gifford felt as if she'd reached into his chest, took hold of his heart, and was thumbing over it. He stood stiff and helpless under her teary gaze. He nodded slowly.
More than anything in the world.
See, she said, and look what it's got you. You're going to...
She clenched her teeth and wiped her eyes.
I am a curse.
Gifford's arm started to rise. He wanted desperately to take her, to hold her, to hug her tight. This might be the last time he'd ever see Rowan. He wanted, if nothing else, to kiss her goodbye. He saw her flinch and stopped.
Got food here?
Tressa said, running into the smithy with a leather satchel and a wineskin.
You're optimistic, Flood told her, as he put the finishing touches on the horse, then blew on it to dry.
Tressa shrugged.
The guy is due for a win. You can't lose your whole life. Am I right?
The three dwarfs looked at each other, not appearing to agree.
Time to go, Giffert,
Padera said. The old woman walked toward him, holding a sword and a scabbard. Rowan wiped her eyes and sniffled. She grabbed up the weapon and thrust it out to him.
I made this for you, too.
Giffert looked at the most magnificent weapon he'd ever seen. Like the armor, it shimmered.
I don't understand. How was all this done so quickly?
Not quickly, she replied. This sword, the armor, I was making a present. Padera said one day you would need all of it. And besides, I can't make a fancy vase. This isn't an amphora with a picture of you on it. But it's the best I've ever made. I poured my soul into this. It's light and stronger than anything. This sword is sharper than a razor, and it shines in the sun so bright it blinds.
She's not kidding, Frost said. This is the finest weapon I've ever seen.
Flood nodded, the two agreeing for the first time that Giffert had known them. Giffert took the weapon from her, surprised how light it was.
You all wield eyes. I don't know how to use this.
You realize it's the thought that counts.
Padera took the sword and buckled it around his waist.
Time to go, Giffert.
The dwarfs had pushed crates beside the horse, allowing him to climb onto the animal's back. Malcolm stood in front, petting the animal's nose and neck, and whispering to it, calming it. Giffert inched his good leg over. He could feel the beast breathing beneath him, pushing his legs out with every inhale. Giffert's hands shook as Malcolm handed him the reins.
"Tie the ends together so they don't fall," Malcolm told him. "Giffert, Narisbur is a smart horse. She can sense you're frightened. That fear scares her. She'll try and throw you off her back. So don't be scared."
"How can I do that?"
Malcolm smiled.
"You're about to ride through an army camp of the Frey, who will attack you with swords, spears, and magic. Given that, do you really think you ought to be afraid of falling off a horse's back? Narisbur is a good horse, a brave horse. She'll help you if you let her. Hang on. Trust her. Trust her, and she'll trust you."
Giffert lay across the horse's back, holding onto the mane and the leather straps of the bridle, as he listened to Malcolm explain how to get to Purdiff. When Giffert could recite the directions back without error, Malcolm smiled, clapped him on the leg, and said,
"You'll do fine. Now remember, stay to the dark areas and the mist. There's always mist this time of year. And don't stop. As soon as you cross the bridge, ride up the bank of the burn to the north. Then, when you see the sun, ride toward it."
"Good luck, Giffert," Tressa said. "And—"
She hesitated and sniffled.
"Thanks for being a friend when no one else was." "Your mother is proud of you, my boy,"
Padera told him, her voice still abrasive enough to sand wood. She mushed her lips around, her eyes all but disappearing in that pile of wrinkles that some called a face.
"I misjudged you. I'll admit that. And I'm sorry. Go be the hero your parents always knew you'd be."
Roan handed up the helmet, and he put it on, feeling the leather sit perfectly on his brow.
"Giffert, I—"
Roan faltered.
"I—" "Just let me imagine the rest of that sentence, okay?"
Malcolm took hold of the bridle and led the horse. When he was clear of the smithy, Malcolm gave Gifford one last smile, and then made a clicking noise. The animal began to trot. Staying on the horse's back wasn't easy. Gifford bounced and banged, slamming hard against the spine of the animal. It wasn't only difficult to stay on, it hurt. There was no padding where he needed it the most. Clapping as he was against the horse's back, only his tight grip kept him up. On the positive side, he wasn't afraid of the horse any more. Having sat on her for so long, he'd gotten used to the animal. Even so, he nearly fell twice when the hammering caused him to drift too far to one side. What's more, Gifford knew the horse wasn't at top speed. Not yet. What will happen when she runs? How fast is she? Are my arms that strong? Will I just fly off? And if she isn't fast? He hoped she was very fast. Gifford caught many a strange look from the few people out in the courtyard and through the city streets as he travelled down through the tiers, but no one said anything until he reached the front gate.
"Where are you going?"
the soldier there asked.
"To Pewdith. I'm gonna bring back help."
The guard, a Frey in full armour, which included a plumed helm, looked at him with a smirk.
"Is that a joke?"
He shook his head.
"The Frey blew out the signal light. No way to light it."
The guard narrowed his eyes at him, then pointed at the gate with his thumb.
"There's an army out there. You don't stand a chance. They'll kill you."
Gifford nodded.
"You say that like it's a bad thing."
While the soldier was puzzling this out, he added,
"Open the gate."
The guard shrugged.
"Your funeral?"
"Yes. Yes, it is. This is my funeral."
Gifford had spent his whole life on a dirt floor, alone in the small home. He lived each day digging in the dirt, looking for clay, and occasionally working it into pots and cups. The nice people ignored him, avoided him as if his twisted back, gimp leg, and dead face were a disease they might catch. The others, the not-so-nice, insulted and belittled. Even the few very nice people, the ones he dared call friends, still made him feel useless. They didn't mean to. They thought they were being kind when they made a big deal of his pottery. Look what the cripple managed to do. Maybe they didn't mean it like that, but that's what he always heard. He was cursed. He was damned. The gods hated him, and he knew with absolute certainty that he would continue to invisibly dig in the dirt until one day he died, covered in a slurry of silt. That was all he could ever hope for. That was the best, and he also knew he should be grateful. Anyone other than Arya's son would have been abandoned to the forest when an infant. That didn't happen to him. This did. As the gate opened, Gifford, dressed in shining armour and wearing a gleaming sword on his side, sat on a beautiful white horse and looked out across the Granford Bridge at the great pillars flying the Instaria banners. Beyond them he saw the campfires of a vast army, the army he was about to single-handedly challenge on behalf of his lady.
"I'm a hero, like in a story or an old song. Me, Gifford the Cripple, also known as the Troll Boy. But not tonight. Tonight I'm a warrior, riding out of wondrous gates to do battle with gods."
He smiled then. The guard noticed.
"You really do want to die, don't you?"
He lingered, staring up at Gifford.
"No, But all people have to. And can you honestly think of a more beautiful way to go?
The guard gave him a sidelong stare, wetting his lower lip.
Are you sure you're not an Instaria?
Gifford shook his head.
Just the son of a brave woman.
At least you'll have the advantage of surprise, the soldier said. They sure won't be expecting you.
Gifford turned.
What's your name?
Plimorath. But my friends call me Plim.
The soldier looked out at the elven camp, and then back up at Gifford.
Are you really going to attempt to ride through that, and bring back help for us?
I really am.
The soldier nodded. He switched the spear he held to his left, and reached up with his right hand, holding his open palm out.
Then you can call me Plim.
Gifford reached down and shook his hand.
Thanks, Plim.
Gifford urged Narisper forward.
Good luck, Plim said. I hope you make it. You know what? Even if you don't, I'm going to tell the story of the shining mounted warrior who rode out the gates of Alenrist on a white horse to meet his destiny wearing a smile. How could I not? And while the story might die with us, for a short time you'll be a hero.
Gifford looked back, waiting for it, for the snide comment, or the parting kick. The,
you're all right, for a cripple. Or even the, you're brave, for a rune.
Instead, he watched as Plim silently closed the gate.
Gifford was alone.
He was heading for the bridge that spanned the Burn River Gorge, dressed in magic armor, with a magic sword, on the back of a magic horse.
Not at all what I expected to be doing today.
Narisper walked across the bridge, her hooves making a lonely clip-clop on the stone. Wasn't hard to stay on her when she walked. Gifford sat up. No wind. Everything was eerily calm. The faint growl of the cascades far below in the Burn River sounded like a cat purring. Some of the spray carried up. He could feel the damp on his face. Little beads of moisture formed on Narisper's mane. Overhead, stars sparkled, and a near full moon guided him, bathing the world in a pale light.
Your mother was special, Padera had told him, and you're supposed to be special too. I've taught you to fight when every single person around you would walk away. I've taught you to strive for the impossible, because that's what you'll have to do. One day, you'll have to do the impossible, Gifford. One day, you'll have to run faster and farther than anyone has, because that is the only thing that will save our people. That's why your mother died, and I won't let her death be in vain.
He never knew his mother. Wished he had. From the stories he had heard, Arya seemed like a good person, a brave person. The sort of person he wanted to be.
We need to go very fast, he whispered to Narisper. Do you understand? I'm gonna be holding on for my life, so you'll have to handle most of the steering. But we're gonna want to go that way.
He pointed up the river where, just as Malcolm said, an early morning mist grew.
You paying attention, White? I'm just saying this because any way that isn't up that bank will get us both killed. You don't want that, do you? Do you even understand, Wunik?
He saw no movement in the camp, The fires were down to embers, with no one near them. Most everyone was asleep, lying under blankets in the open or in tents. Gifford's bare feet hugged Narrowspur's body as best they could, and as he reached the far side of the bridge, he lay down low and once more hugged the horse's neck. Now that he was to it, now that he faced the end, he felt a sickness in his stomach. He was scared. "I really don't want to die." He thought once more of Roan, of her in that smithy, as some monstrous fray broke in. He might not kill her. Why would he? She wouldn't fight. She'd cower. No, he'd take her, and make her his slave. Giffert's teeth clenched. "One," he told Narrowspur, and gave her a kick with his feet. He was glad for the strength in his arms as the animal lunged forward. Another kick sent the horse from that already familiar but agonizing trot to a gallop. He held tight, squeezing with arms and legs. The gallop was better than the trot, smoother, but the speed was terrifying. Narrowspur cleared the bridge, but was still heading due east. She hadn't been listening at all. He had to turn her. Risking a horrible fall, he drew his left hand up and, grasping the rein on that side, pulled her head toward the riverbank, aiming north. "Turn!" With reluctance, the horse finally got the hint and left the road. A moment later, he was in the elven camp, dashing between tents and smouldering fires. Gifford didn't look. No point in it. He stayed low, hugging tight to Narrowspur's neck. He heard shouts and a horn. Something hit them, something hot. He saw a burst of light. Smothering warmth enveloped them both. No pain, just a sound like a flock of birds taking to the sky. While Gifford thought Narrowspur was running at top speed, at that moment he discovered he was sorely mistaken. Leaping over a sleeping fray, she bolted forward, faster than he ever thought possible. The rhythmic thrump-thrump of her hooves became peals of thunder as she advanced to a full, eye-watering sprint. After the initial jolt, Gifford found it easy to stay on her back. They were moving at an impossible speed, and yet there wasn't any bouncing nor jerking, just a steady back and the rushing wind. Nevertheless, Gifford clung to Narrowspur in life-loving terror. They were going too fast for him to see grass or rocks or dirt. Everything was a smear of lights and darks. Gifford was moving so fast, he could have been flying.
"One day, you'll have to run faster than any man ever has."
Two more bursts of fiery light exploded around him, which only served to drive Narrowspur faster. He could hear her snorting, breathing hard, driven by fire and fear. With the river gorge on her left, she couldn't go that way, and the attacks coming from the right drove her north. More shouts erupted, and everything became incredibly cold. Ice tried to form around them, but faded as quickly as it appeared. Then wind swirled, kicking up dust and tearing down nearby tents. Elven soldiers raced toward them, but they were too late to catch the panicked Narrowspur, who understood quite well the idea of running for her life. Spears were thrown. At that speed, the odds of hitting him were impossible. He thought. Only these weren't men. The fray were maddeningly accurate. Strangely, this saved them both. A miss might have killed Narrowspur, but of the five who tried, all aimed for Gifford, and all hit him square. Four struck Gifford's back, and one exceedingly well-aimed javelin hit his head. The blow rang off his helm, but Gifford continued to hug tight to Narrowspur, both arms around her neck, as she flew. The shouting grew fainter, their course less erratic. And gradually, little by little, Narrowspur slowed down. soon she was back to a trot, and finally a walk. Gifford opened his eyes and looked up. He was in a field illuminated by the rising sun. He was also alone. Looking back over the rump of the horse, he didn't see the elven camp. He'd made it through.
Ha! I survived!
Then he cursed his idiocy.
We need to keep running,
he shouted at Narispa, who was puffing for air.
Maybe not quite so fast, but more than this.
He gave her a few minutes to rest, and then turned her toward the rising sun and kicked her once more. Off they flew across the high plains toward the High Spear Valley and Purdith, riding as the first rays of morning light filled the sky. Chapter 19 Drawing Swords. So often I have heard that war is a noble and necessary thing, the answer to many problems. But I have found that when war becomes a reality, peace becomes the noble and necessary thing, because there is no problem greater than war. The Book of Bryn. Malcolm walked into Nephron's bedchamber as the Lord of the Rist was using the chamber pot.
We need to talk, the slave said,
as if he had such a right. Nephron even noticed a dash of demand in his voice. Malcolm had been more useful than Nephron had expected, but the rune was taking too many liberties with their relationship, which had started out cobweb thin, and over the last few months had begun to fray. Malcolm had already served his purpose, but apparently he didn't know that.
Indeed we do, he replied.
He got off the pot and entered the sitting room, where he found Malcolm on the cushioned chair near the fireplace. His legs were stretched out, his arms folded across his chest, a stern look in his eye.
I've let this go on way too long. Give a slave a pair of shoes, and they will walk all over you.
Let's begin with how you're not allowed to enter my chambers unannounced. For that matter, let's go over the fact that you're not even allowed in the Kype anymore. I want you to tell Arion and Sori to hide the archers, Malcolm instructed.
What?
Tell them to hide the existence of Moya and her archers from the Thane's army. Then tell Moya to concentrate her attacks on the Spider Corps.
Nephron was too stunned to reply right away, and just stood staring in disbelief.
The little rune was giving him orders. Military orders.
You don't make demands of me, slave!
Malcolm had the gall to roll his eyes. He actually looked annoyed.
I've ruined this one. I let him think too much of himself. Letting him breathe free air for so long has overinflated his little rune lungs and poisoned him with a taste for things he can't have.
Why didn't I see it before? I might have done something. But now,
we've been over this.
Malcolm pointed to the missing collar that wasn't on his neck.
I'm not your slave, and if you recall, not even your father, who had the right to do so, treated me as one.
The callous disregard and lack of respect was too much.
We aren't in Rulin any more. This is Alan Rist, and here you are my property.
Nephron was shocked to see Malcolm smile, as if the man found the comment amusing. Nephron sneered back.
Did I say something funny?
You might be forgetting that Alan Rist is no longer under Frey control. In this place, my people already conquered yours, so I wouldn't be so quick to throw around terms like slavery, property, or who owns who or what. you might find yourself on the wrong end of that discussion.
Surprise, which had shifted to sympathy and then irritation, gave way to anger.
And you shall find yourself on the wrong end of my sword!
Malcolm replied with a humiliating look of pity. Nephron, not ever having been the object of such an expression, from a rune, no less, paused for a moment. Intuition told him he couldn't be so far off in his assessment. Something was wrong. Very wrong. When a strong defending force retreated too easily, he knew to expect a trap. When a warrior was overconfident, he knew to look for a secret, a hidden dagger, or an associate hiding in wait. Malcolm was too relaxed, too sure of himself.
"I'm not joking, Nephron," Malcolm said in an oddly stern tone. "You need to do it, and do so now before anything is given away."
Nephron took a threatening step toward him. Most men, most Frey, would have cowered. Malcolm didn't even flinch.
"What am I missing?"
Malcolm's expression turned from pity to annoyance.
"I understand that you think of me as a common slave. Understandable, given that you grew up in a household where I played such a role. I also realize you have an ego the size of Mount Mador, but you need to set that aside and do as I say. If you want to be Fain, then listen. I didn't work this hard for these many long years to have you ruin everything because you see me as being beneath you."
"You are beneath me. Very, very far beneath me."
"Yes, fine. I'm beneath you. Now please, go tell Arion to cloud the archers."
Nephron felt the blood throbbing in his temple. He was rarely ever this angry when not swinging a sword. Still, he held back. Every fiber of his being was telling him not all was as it seemed. There was something here, something unexplained. Discovering a surprise of this magnitude hiding beneath his feet was shocking to the point of being frightening. Nephron hadn't been scared in centuries. He had been a little worried when Grindel exploded Stryker, and he admitted to himself, and only himself, that he'd been quite concerned in Arwol when they had been surrounded and Tek-Chin had nearly died. But he hadn't been frightened. Only the unknown had the power to scare him. And Malcolm was creeping into the realm of the scary. For one thing, Malcolm was right. Nephron's father had never treated Malcolm like a slave. The only work Malcolm had ever done was serve wine at parties and meetings. A perfect way to listen to conversations, Nephron just realized. For as far back as he could remember, Zephyron always treated Malcolm as...
"As far back as I can remember?"
Nephron thought hard and was surprised to discover he couldn't recall exactly when Malcolm had come to Alan Rist. The bulk of Nephron's life had been spent afield. He had no idea when he first noticed his father had a new slave. As far as Nephron was concerned, Malcolm came into existence only when Nephron first devised his plan to have a rune kill Shigon. Nephron needed a disposable person, and he'd just inherited his father's household, his servants, horses, and slaves. He picked one whose name happened to be Malcolm. But he'd been around long before that. He must have been. But for how long? Was it before the bad winter? Yes, definitely before then. Was it before Tek-Chin got his scar? Nephron thought it was. Further and further back, he remembered seeing him.
I must be mistaken. It had to have been a different slave, wasn't it?
It had to be.
Runes don't live that long.
Watching him, Malcolm offered a gentle, sympathetic frown, the sort a mother might show a son who had skinned a knee.
Nephron, I want you to succeed. I want you to be not merely the Fane, but the ruler of the world. You could usher in a new age, and build a civilization where the divisions of the past are healed. I can help you do that, but you have to listen to my counsel.
How old are you? Nephron asked.
Malcolm smiled. Just putting that together now, are you? Doesn't bode well for your chances of being an intelligent ruler, does it? Your father noticed right away, but then your father would have been a better ruler.
Malcolm slapped his thighs with his palms and sighed.
But he didn't listen to me either. Of course, the very reason he didn't listen is the same reason he would have been a better ruler. I can't explain how frustrating that is. You, on the other hand, are nicely spoiled. You just want, and you don't care who has to suffer so you can have. It's just not in your character to notice those you consider beneath you. Like me.
Malcolm paused, as if something on the ceiling caught his attention. He looked up long enough for Nephron to glance up as well. There was nothing there. Then Malcolm said,
That's how you'll die, by the way. This underlying blindness will be your doom. And even my telling you won't change anything because you'll forget. You're far too set in your ways, and far too full of yourself. But that's the way of things. The ultimate irony is that good people can't do what's needed because what's often required is bad, and they wouldn't be good people if they did bad things, now would they?
Nephron was truly worried, and wondered if he should get his sword. Malcolm wasn't a rune,
nor was he Frey.
The problem was he had no idea what Malcolm was. Somehow, this person had deceived everyone. Maybe for centuries.
No, not everyone. His father had known.
Must have. That was why he had treated Malcolm differently. But he never told anyone. Never told his son.
Why?
Why didn't my father tell me about you?
Tell you what?
Malcolm pressed the tips of his fingers together. A decidedly sinister action, the sort of finger expression he'd expect from a Mirrorleaf.
Is that it? Is Malcolm Mirrorleaf? Is he just making himself look like he's runic?
He'd heard of such things. Malcolm could be a spy sent by the Fane. Only,
no. He had been in the Rist too long.
Fenelaus would have had to send him, and she was dead. And why would a spy help kill Shigon and raise the runes in revolt against the Forest Throne?
Why didn't my father warn me that you weren't really a rune, that you weren't his slave? So, we are finally past that.
Good. Malcolm nodded in approval.
I honestly don't know why your father kept you in the dark. I actually thought he had told you. And maybe he did. And you just never heard. You do that, you know.
Who are you? And how did you come to serve my father?
Malcolm sighed.
This list of questions will have to wait. I've already wasted too much time here. Sun is coming up, and you have a battle to wage. The first real battle of a very long war. The first step of which is to order Arion to cloud the archers. Tell her and Suri not to interfere at all with the Spider Corps. They will pinpoint her if she does.
but the Miralith can't protect themselves from what they aren't expecting, and the Spider Corps have never seen arrows before. Send out the First Legion. Wraith's command. And we have a fortress. It doesn't make sense to send soldiers out beyond the protection of the walls.
Have you seen the top of the Spire Rock recently?
Malcolm asked.
These walls are no protection against the Spider Corps. Now, as I was saying, send Wraith out with his spearmen, and have Moya bring her archers up behind. Have them push until she's in range, and then direct all fire on the Miralith. Do that, and you'll actually stand a chance of surviving to see another sunrise.
Malcolm got up, causing Nefren to take another step back. The never-really-a-slave started for the door, then paused as he laid hand to the latch.
I heard Tesh saved your life.
Nefren nodded.
Still planning on killing the kid?
I don't know. Nefren narrowed his eyes at Malcolm as he finally realized that the ex-slave hadn't brought the topic up on a whim. The realization dawned that Malcolm probably never brought anything up on a whim.
What do you think I should do?
Malcolm smiled back at him. This was a different sort of smile. Not sad, not a pitiful look, and not a snide or sinister grin. This was a genuinely pleased expression.
Now you're getting this.
The men of the First Spear stood in the courtyard before the front gate. 500 men, shoulder to shoulder, the faint light of the morning's new sun revealing grim, apprehensive faces. Wraith walked up and down the rows, checking gear. They'd done this drill once a week for 4 months, and yet still, many had failed to fasten shoulder straps or helms properly. They were nervous, scared, and distracted, and Wraith couldn't blame them. Farmers, shepherds, woodsmen, they were all becoming warriors that day, gambling their lives. Dorians had it easier. Their lives were never worth much. But these men had left wives, children, homes, and land. They all trusted him. He was the God-killer. Looking from face to face, Wraith guessed that more than half wouldn't live to see the sun set. Maybe none of them would. Wraith had ordered the men of the First Spear to suit up and assemble at the front gate just before dawn. Malcolm had awakened him in the dark, relaying the order. But when Nefren finally came down to the courtyard, he appeared surprised to find them waiting, and for reasons that eluded Wraith, Nefren gave Malcolm a look that might have been suspicion. A moment later, Moya and her archers appeared, filing into the back of the yard among the practice dummies. For so many people in one place, the yard was disturbingly quiet. A few songbirds sang happy tunes, sounding out of place on this particular spring morning.
"I know you're nervous."
Nefren stood up on the speech rock, what everyone called the conspicuous thumb of stone that jutted up near the north end of the lower courtyard. He spoke in a loud, confident voice.
"A few of you, quite a few, are outright terrified. Don't worry. It's natural. Everyone goes through this, but trust me, you'll get past it. Just remember your training, and you'll be fine,"
says the one person in the yard who won't fight.
Wraith didn't care if Nefron's god forbade Frey killing Frey. He found it impossible to follow someone who wasn't willing to march out in front.
"Spear leaders!"
Nefren waved them over. Although the spears were filled with a mix of clansmen, each was commanded by a chieftain. Over the course of months, the men who served changed out, as several went home to deal with farms and family. The same applied to the chieftains. Tegan of Warwick and Harkon of Melun were the lucky ones on duty that month, along with Wraith and Ulward, who, not having homes to go to, were always there. "Third spear!" Nephron looked at Tegan of Warwick as he drew a crude map in the dirt with a stick. "You'll wheel left after you cross the bridge. Try to form up here, and hold that line as best you can. Second spear?" He turned to Harkon of Melun. "In the same way, you'll wheel right, and form up here." He drew a line in the dirt. "Remember to keep the men tight and in formation, three deep. Wraith, you'll take first spear right up the center."
"Lucky me."
"Moya, I want you to follow first spear. There's a rise on the plain, a natural hill that..."
"Wolf's Head," Wraith said.
"Right, Wolf's Head. That's where they'll position the spider corps." Nephron pointed at Wraith. "Your goal is to push close enough to Wolf's Head so that Moya and her archers can rain death." He turned to Moya. "I can't emphasize enough how crucial you are in this. All the Mirilith will be bunched together, making your job easier. But if you fail to kill them, well, the war might end right here."
Nephron pointed to the parapet.
"I'll fly flags on the wall. Black means to form up. Green is the order to attack. Blue indicates we have the advantage, and you should press the attack. Red is the signal to retreat, but remember to retreat in an orderly manner. Don't let the men just run. You'll need to march back together in the same order as you marched out, or more will die. Any questions?"
"Where is Persephone?" Wraith asked.
"Why isn't she down here seeing us off? She is the Keenig. It's her place, not yours."
Nephron looked down at the dirt map for a moment and took a deep breath.
"Keenig Persephone was attacked last night."
Several erupted in surprise, but none louder than Wraith. He shoved his way past Ulward and Tegan to confront the Lord of the Wrist.
"By who?"
"Aral. It slipped into our room, and might have killed her if it hadn't been for Sebek and Tesh."
Wraith turned around to glare at Tesh, who stood in the crowd of soldiers, looking guilty. "You didn't tell me."
"You were asleep," the kid said. "And it was over. And there was this big battle today, and..."
"Persephone was hurt, but she'll be fine," Nephron assured everyone.
Wraith fumed. He whirled back at Nephron. "So, a row is allowed in the Kuiper, but I'm not." "It wasn't allowed in, and this proves the necessity for tight security, doesn't it?"
That smug look, that lie told right to his face.
Wraith wanted to kill Nephron at that moment more than he'd ever wanted to kill anyone. Security had nothing to do with it. The other chieftains petitioned for audiences and received them. But Wraith was always refused. Not refused. No, nothing so definitive. He was merely delayed. Delayed indefinitely. For months, he'd believed Persephone didn't want to see him. That's what he'd been told. And foolishly he believed it. Looking at Nephron, he was now certain Persephone had become a prisoner in the Kuiper. Nephron was keeping them apart, turning her into a puppet. Maybe not even a puppet. Maybe there was no row. What is to stop him from killing her and saying he's taking orders from her? She might already be dead. Wraith took a step forward and glared at Nephron.
"After this battle, I'm seeing her whether you like it or not. Bar the door to the Kuiper, and I'll get Suri to melt that Tetlin bronze to a puddle. Do you understand?"
"We're all on the same side here," Nephron said. "We're all allies in this fight."
"I doubt that. I'm not even sure you know what the word allies means."
"I'm not your enemy, Wraith." He said this with a steady, reassuring calm. "The elves, they're outside the walls." Wraith narrowed his eyes. One